Dawn, thank you. Thank you. It's beautiful. And your accomplices, thank you. Just beautiful. It's impossible to try to identify the person who first sang the song. I've looked it up. I've researched it. It says, historians say, that it originated in the U.S. Southern Appalachians. Well, that's where I live, in the U.S. Southern Appalachians. But did it emerge from the Scottish? Or was it from the Irish? Or was it from the Welsh? Or the nomadic group called the Black Dutch, who brought that song to the Appalachians? But it's been sung for two centuries, adapted, repeated, and it's a song that we all can identify with. So Burl Ives and Pete Seeger made it a popular song in the 20th century, and it captured the heartache of a lot of people then, and it does today. If you're a refugee or an unauthorized immigrant in the U.S., you know that tune and you know that word, those words, as you are trying to navigate a path to citizenship or an education for your children or adequate food for your family. If you're a person of color in the U.S., you know what it is to be powerless and profiled without privilege. And man, you know how to sing that song, yearning for another place and another time. If you live with a disability, physical or mental, you've experienced being an outsider or a stranger. If you're a woman in ministry, you've experienced being the only female voice in the room singing in the midst of everyone who's singing in the bass clef. I sit on the board of the Morehouse School of Religion, and I went to their meeting recently. I was the only white person in the room. It's a new experience for me. Well, you know, I'm moving and living into that experience. Very seldom am I the only white person in the room. It feels different, doesn't it? It's like a stranger. With the admonition that is ours in the Epistle to the Hebrews is, do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers. We all know it. I have it hanging and beautifully calligraphied in my office. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers. And we pride ourselves, especially in the South of the United States, as being people of hospitality. You're just as good at it. We just perpetrate that myth. But you know, the church is not quite as good at it as we might like to pride ourselves that we are. As a matter of fact, the church is not unlike the culture where we live that inhibits us or inhabits with has a fear of the stranger. And we are talking about that a lot in my context right now. The early church dealt with strangers, and you heard two texts today that use the word stranger in them. The early church's first experience with responding to the stranger when there was a knock at the door from some widows, some Jewish widows who had moved away, experienced all the cultures, and then returned home. And they wanted to be included in the offering that was taken for the widows who needed help. And so they knocked at the door and said, "Is there room? Is there room in the church for us?" And there was, and they were supported. But it wasn't long after that the despised neighbors from the north came and knocked at the door of the church. This was the Samaritans then. They knocked at the door. Well, first it were these Hellenized widows. Now it's the Samaritans. Where is all of this going to end? Well, then Philip preaches to an Ethiopian, somebody completely outside the Judeo-Christian tradition. Is there room for him? And then there's a Roman centurion. He isn't a Jew, and he wants to talk to someone about becoming a follower of Christ. Do we let him in? Do we let him in? If we do, then we're opening up the floodgates to them, the stranger. The truth is, that's who you and I are. We're the Gentiles in this story. And today's reading from Ephesians beautifully outlines how, through the body and the blood of Christ, Jew and Gentiles have become reconciled into one new humanity. Okay, let's fast forward a little bit in church history. This year is the 500th anniversary of the Protestant Reformation. So you can really hear that knock, can't you? Martin Luther's knock on the door. We can imagine hearing him hammering those theses to the door. You know, I don't know that he really meant to start the Protestant church. I really think he was just speaking to what he saw happening in the church in that day and speaking prophetically. Was there room for him? Go another 100 years. That knock at the door then were the ones that we name ourselves after and claim. Baptists knocked at the door of the church that was sanctioned by the state with our distinct search for religious liberty, bringing our unique contribution to the church, separation of church and state, soul liberty, local church autonomy, freedom of religion. These freedoms were the result of long and persistent knocks at the door of the church of those who were on the outside, strangers to the established church. So the church is cracking open just a little bit at a time, a little bit more and a little bit more through crises. Every time this happens, it's a crisis. Every time it just cracks open a little bit more. A friend of mine says, every case is painful and controversial because, you know, we are of the world as well as in it. And because fear of the stranger runs very deep. Well, my personal experience, you know, I told you I live in the Southern Appalachians. I've lived all across North Carolina, and I grew up 100 miles from where the lunch counter sit-ins happened in Greensboro, North Carolina. All right, so all of the civil rights unrest in the South, it was lived and acted out very close to where I live. And so my personal experience of that cracking open happened during my childhood. And I'll tell you one of the most painful experiences of my growing up Baptist in my home church was the day that there was African Americans knocking at our church door. Except I don't really know how loudly they were knocking. I actually think people from within in the church were the ones who were afraid they were going to knock. And so I remember sitting in the pew about 15 years old at the church business meeting where someone says, what are we going to do if a person of color comes and wants to join our church? What will our response be? Can you guess? My home church said no. We wouldn't. We wouldn't accept them. It was very, very painful time. And I still have lots of painful memories about that time. In our high schools and our colleges, we assign our students, and I've worked part of my ministry in campus ministry. I've been a pastor and a campus minister, a hospice chaplain, a plethora of things I've done in the church. We always assigned our students to read Martin Luther King's Letter from a Birmingham Jail. But I'm convinced church members need to read it. Not just our students and you know, working through academic degrees, but we all in the church need to read it because he is basically speaking to white pastors as the civil rights movement was knocking on the door. He was knocking on the door of the church and mostly to white pastors who were saying, slow down, we're not quite ready. You know, we're with you, but you know, you can't move too fast. That's what he was speaking to, and I think the church did not hear him. And now we see more black lives that are being taken and killed on our streets. We have more black men incarcerated than any other ethnic group, any other race in our nation. We have so much work to do in our country on Black Lives Matter. So it's been challenging to the church, especially in the South, for the knocking at the door. And then, you know, that I came along, this generation of women who've knocked at the door. We knocked and we knocked. When I became a pastor in North Carolina, I didn't know any women pastors, so my knuckles have calluses on them from knocking, if you want to check them out. But it continues to be painful now, as the larger church cannot ignore the knocking at the door of the LGBTQ community, wanting to know, what about me? Can I come in? Is there room in the church for me? Will you make room for our families? Will it be possible for us to join you in singing the hymn based on Psalm 23, where I am no more a stranger or a guest, but like a child at home? One thing we can be sure of, I can assure you that the knocking on the door of the church is not going away. Now, we might turn a deaf ear to it, but it's not going to stop. There will always be a stranger knocking at the door of the church and demanding a response, requiring a response. And we've seen the response, often the response of xenophobia, the fear of the stranger. We are urged, though, in the letter to the Hebrews, by the admonition to embrace philoxenos. Now, that's a Greek word you may not have heard before. The Greek word for stranger and love, philos, which is love, and xenos, which is stranger. Philoxenos, the love of the stranger. And the way we use that word, the way we have translated that word in our, in English, is hospitality, but that does not quite sound like love of stranger. And to me, when I hear the word hospitality, but that is what we are urged to do in the letter to the Hebrews. Jesus taught us a new way of relating to the other, to the stranger. And the letter to the church at Ephesus gives a glowing testimony to this new way of relating, to the removal of the walls that divide those of us who are in Christ. The early church struggled to move from fear to love, just as we do. And we are struggling today, in my context, to move from fear to love with refugees and immigrants. We are a lot like the early church. But I want to encourage us to take one more step, not just from fear to love, but to learn. I have been convinced by our Alliance founders and the pastors that I work with that we're all called to move that next step, because those who've lived on the margins, those who've been excluded, have learned how to adapt in amazing ways. I mean, they've gotten real creative. They have abilities and skills and relationships that I could learn a lot from. So learning from those who've been marginalized, learning from the stranger, can bring healing in church and society. So this posture of learning is one that we take with our ministry partners in the Alliance of Baptists. From our partners that are in the Republic of Cuba, in the nation of Cuba, I've been going to Cuba for 20 years now, back and forth. Oh, actually, I'm wearing one of my Cuban stoles today. A woman in Cuba crocheted this. From our partners in Cuba, we're learning how to grow church. Because the organization we connect with, called the Fraternity of Baptist Churches in Cuba, started out with 3 churches, and now there are 45 of them. And they have about that many more missions. I call them casa cultos. They're growing a vibrant and robust church. We could learn from them, couldn't we? Our partners that are in Brazil are encouraging us as we face a government with policies and positions that many of us consider immoral and unjust. Our friends there said this, Paula, we can really help you with this. We know what it's like to live with corrupt government officials. We'll be your friend, and we'll help you through this time. I had a profound learning experience from one of our ministry partners when I traveled to the Republic of Georgia, which you have experienced these same partners in ministry. I spent a week in a Muslim girls' school in the northwest province in the Republic of Georgia. And there, an 18-year-old girl named Gilda taught me how to pray. I went to spend time with them and pray with them 5 times a day. Did they have fun covering my hair and my head with a scarf first? I mean, that was the first thing we had to do, was get all the scarf covering, make sure my ankles were covered, everything had to be covered. Then I had to learn the ablutions, which is actually I think, the most beautiful part of the prayer. So, and that washing I have continued to use in some of my own personal practice, in offering a prayer as I wash. And then one of the other parts of the prayer that she taught me is their intercessory prayer, which they hold their hands like this. She called them the "I want" prayers. But that was how she knew to translate it into English. But hold their prayers and whisper their prayers to God. Beautiful. So Gilda is one of my favorite Facebook friends right now. She has taught me a lot, this 18-year-old. It's very hard for those of us who call ourselves Christians to truly welcome the stranger, much less to learn from them. And I sense my own resistance and recognize that I am definitely culture-bound. More often than not, I find myself closing to the door to those who are strangers around me, much like the innkeeper whose lack of hospitality is legendary in the Christ childbirth narrative. His inn is forgotten, while the kindness of strangers expressed by shepherds and animals and oriental kings is what we sing. You know, one of the most striking biblical stories of the impact of receiving from the stranger is the story of the Good Samaritan. There's a stranger who is a guest in the country. He's an outsider. He becomes the means of healing for a Jew, the insider. So this Christ-like way of being suggests that the host and the stranger are one and the same. One and the same. The stranger, who is now turned neighbor, shares not only the cup of cold water and a loaf of bread, but the adventure of life itself, says one theologian. And when we share the adventure of life, we discover who and whose we are. There's a Muslim proverb that I learned recently. Let me share it with you as part of my closing. None of you has faith till you wish for your neighbor what you wish for yourself. None of us have faith till we wish for our neighbor what we wish for ourselves. From fear of stranger to love of stranger to learning who and whose we are from those who are different but yet so like us. This is our call as followers of Jesus. So may we, the Church of Jesus Christ, gathered in this place, be granted wisdom and courage for faith to wish for the stranger turned neighbor what we wish for ourselves. May we grow to lovingly greet all our neighbors who carry the spark of God on the inside with the biblical affirmation in today's text. You are no longer strangers and aliens, but you are citizens with the saints and also members of the household of God. Let it be so, my friends. Amen.